Okay. Looks like we had a few technical difficulties, but we're going to start our show, and I'm actually going to start it over again just for the podcast sake. I just want to tell everyone, welcome to the Queen's Council. My name is Arlene Fenton.
And I am Shawana Ruth Bridges.
And we host the blogs entitled Black Women Vote and Character Corner, respectively. The Queen's Council is a very special internet radio show for black women who honor the past, plan for the future, and move forward powerfully. Shawana and I are pleased to announce that we have an extremely special guest. We have with us today the United States presidential nominee representing the Green Party. And I'd just like to give a little background of our guest tonight. Since being elected in 1992 as the first African-American congresswoman from Georgia, our guest has gained national and international renown as a tireless advocate for human rights, voting rights, and for holding the government accountable. Our guest believes that the government should not only uplift local communities, but should also uplift the dignity of the human spirit. This means promoting the rights of seniors, of students, of the disabled, of minorities, of veterans, and of workers. Her voting record proves her commitment to this belief. Our esteemed guest is known as a passionate, intelligent, charismatic, and effective former member of the House of Representatives and of the Democratic Party. Our guest has been an outspoken advocate of the victims of Hurricane Katrina and an outspoken critic of the government's slow response to that tragedy. Our guest was the first freshman in Congress to head the Women's Caucus Task Force on Children, Youth, and Families. She later served as vice president of the Democratic sophomore class. Our guest was appointed to the powerful and prestigious Armed Services Committee and to the International Relations Committee, where she served as ranking member on its International Operations and Human Rights Subcommittee. In this capacity, she sponsored the Arms Transfer Code of Conduct, aimed at preventing the sale of U.S. weapons to dictators, which passed in the House in June of 1997. When Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, this former congresswoman spoke out against the inadequate government response. A longtime environmental advocate, she introduced a bill that would create a comprehensive environmental cleanup plan to deal with the toxic aftermath of the hurricane. Our guest is currently running for President of the United States of America under the umbrella of the Green Party. I could go on and on, but I want you to hear from this powerful woman for yourself. Welcome, United States presidential nominee, Cynthia McKinney.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be with you tonight.
Oh, we are so excited to have you. We have a lot of questions, and so what I'm going to do, listeners, is we're going to actually open up the lines maybe in about half an hour so that Shawana and I can get everything through. It is an honor. Can I call you Cynthia, or should it be Miss McKinney? I'm trying to figure out if I should curtsy.
No, you can just call me Cynthia.
Okay.
Well, let me just, can I start
sure.
and just say that, you know, there are so many issues that are so important to the future of our country, to all of us, to the global community, and this is a presidential election season. In November, the American people will elect someone to succeed George W. Bush in the White House, and there are so many issues that are not being discussed.
Yeah.
It is as if the political discourse has been a circle has been drawn around a small number of subjects that are acceptable to discuss. Mm-hmm. And then everything else that is a possible, viable policy solution mm-hmm. to the issues that challenge us as a country and as communities across our country mm-hmm. are left out of the discussion. For example, the American people overwhelmingly voted in November of 2006 to end U.S. engagement in Iraq, mm-hmm. and yet it didn't happen. And let me tell you that my one vote, I was the only Democratic member of Congress to lose in November in 2006, in the 2006 election cycle. And I was a sure vote against the continued funding for the war.
Mm-hmm.
But because the war party, which exists in both the Democrat and Republican parties, were counting their votes, they orchestrated a crossover campaign like very much what is going on now nationally with the Republicans, got rid of me, and the funding for the war bill passed exactly by the number of votes required. That means that had I been there, the vote would have failed. We would be talking about how we're going to divide up the peace dividend so that we can make sure that our children are secure, our neighborhoods are secure, our seniors are secure, and workers have dignity.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so now not only do we have to continue to talk about ways in which we're going to end the illegal and immoral engagement of our country in Iraq as well as Afghanistan, but we also need to be talking about how we're going to end U.S. militarism all over the world, as an aspect of our engagement with the world is based on military violence.
Mm-hmm.
The next issue that is not being discussed, despite the fact that the healthcare professionals have come out and said, we want a single-payer healthcare system in this country, a Medicare-for-all type of organization. No longer is it acceptable that an insurance industry bureaucrat can get in between the decision that a doctor or a nurse practitioner makes on behalf of their patient.
Mm.
So the physicians have said they want single payer. The people have said that they want single payer. The Democratic activist base has said that they want a single payer system in this country. And yet neither of the Democratic candidates is accepting that call for a single-payer healthcare system in our country. We ought to have had, from the very first moment that the Democrats took over control of the Congress, a rollback on all of the infringements on our civil liberties. Not only do we have one Patriot Act, we've got two Patriot Acts. We've got the Secret Evidence Act. We've got the Military Commissions Act, which are all affronts to our Bill of Rights. And our right to privacy and our right to have civil liberties that sort of were the basis and the foundation of the founding of this country. We also need to get our fiscal house in order.
Mm-hmm.
The former comptroller of the United States, David Walker, has said that if all of the debtors of the, I'm sorry, of all of the creditors, had called in their debts that the United States owes to them, we couldn't pay it.
Right.
It's some $53 trillion. We have to deal with our economy, and yet we continue to spend $720 million every day for this war.
Mm.
We don't even have assurance that when the election results are announced, that those results actually reflect the will of the people who cast their votes, because we don't know if our votes are even counted. In the 2000 presidential election, 1 million black people went to the polls and voted. And when they cast their votes, they left thinking that their votes were going to be counted, but their votes were not counted. 1 million black people in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
In 2004, 3 million people went to the polls and voted, and their votes were not counted in the 2004 election.
Mm.
In New Hampshire, a test recount was done that found a 22% error rate.
Really? Wow.
What election in this country can sustain a 22% error rate. Now, is it that our policymakers have told us that we're in Iraq to bring democracy? Isn't that one of the things that they said to us?
Yes, it is.
Well, it seems that we have to secure our democracy here at home. And we have no democracy at home when we can't be assured that our votes are actually being counted. There are so many other issues. For example, we just recently, I was in Philadelphia at the protest of the Mumia decision. The fact that we still have political prisoners in this country is something that is not very widely known, but we do. And it is clear that the trial during which Mumia was found guilty was a trial whose outcome was already rigged. And it was rigged because you had judicial misconduct with the judge using the N-word, and you had prosecutorial misconduct because you had the prosecutor using methods to make sure that there were as few blacks on the jury as possible. Now, normally, in a situation like this, you would get a new trial. But that was not granted to Mumia. Instead, what was granted to Mumia was the opportunity to review the, not the guilt phase of his entire process, but the death penalty phase only. This is called the Mumia exception. So then we have, when we have a history of jurisprudence that says one thing, but we make an exception for one person, then that's not justice. And so that's why I was in Philadelphia at the Mumia sentencing decision protest. And then most recently, we've had the situation with Sean Bell, where the verdict was read that allowed the three officers who fired 50 shots. It is inconceivable that.
I read your statement on that, and I'm hoping we can get into that later on in the show. What other issues do you think are being ignored that are of high importance to the American
people? Well, you know, I think what we have to understand is that at some point we have to envision justice being put on the table. Nancy Pelosi took impeachment off the table. So it's clear that our public policy makers, the people that we vote into office, have the power to decide what's on the table and what's off the table. But they only have that power because we give it to them, we the voters. And if they misuse that power or abuse that power, then we the voters have to take them out of public policy making positions. Now, there's a situation that has existed in our country since slavery that has remained unaddressed. And as a result of slavery and the inherited differences that have accumulated from generation to generation, we've got racial disparities that still exist in this country. Folks don't talk about it. CNN certainly isn't going to inform you, because if you use CNN as a basis of your information and they tell you that there are racial disparities if you're black, you're going to say, yes, I suspected that. And if you're white, you're going to say, well, I didn't know that. We have to do something about that. But as long as people remain uninformed, then we can continue to get the kind of public policy that doesn't serve our interests. And if we fail to address the continuing disparities that exist in this country, that is not a sustainable way of life for this country. In fact, it was the Kerner Commission that even talked about there being two Americas, a black America and a white America, and that was not right. Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't taken the necessary steps. One generation did make the ultimate sacrifice, even in blood, to achieve certain policy changes. And we experienced those changes, and then we had a series of setbacks, which is what I talked about a little bit in the Sean Bell piece that you want to talk about a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But, for example, when the New York Times writes in their paper that nearly one half of all of the black men between the ages of 16 and 64 are unemployed, then you would think that our public policymakers would say, oh, my goodness, we've got to do something about that. And we, the voters, we have the power to dictate to those public policymakers, oh, you must do something about that. But if we don't do anything about it, we won't get the public policy, and the disparities will continue.
The what can we do to hold?
We have to hold our elected officials accountable, and we have to be more informed voters.
Mm-hmm.
It is not acceptable for us. You see, the definition of politics
mm-hmm.
is the authoritative allocation of values in a society. That's what political science students learn. But what actually happens is that only a certain people, certain subset of the population are able to get their values allocated.
Right.
And the rest of us don't get our values allocated. But now, if our values are not allocated, and we continue to participate in the process, that means we're doing something wrong. We have to revamp our participation so that we can get our values allocated too. You can't have a situation in our country where Loyola University Hull House will do a report on the quality of life experienced by people in Chicago. And they discover, lo and behold, on every index of that they measure, that blacks do not share in the same quality of life of whites living in Chicago. And, in fact, that it will take 200 years without a public policy intervention to close the gap between the quality of life experienced by blacks in Chicago and that of whites in Chicago. Now, Chicago is a city that's been run by Democrats for forever. And if we have that kind of report that is done by a university, you would think that the party that gets 9 out of 10 black votes would say, oh, my goodness, we've got to do something to address this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the party doesn't do it, then the people who are suffering those disparities have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if our attitude toward politics is that politics is a popularity contest, mm-hmm. politics is a beauty contest, politics is about what somebody wears or how someone talks.
Or what kind of lapel pin they're wearing.
Or what their lapel pin is. If
or
that is your idea of politics, then you lose from the very beginning because that has nothing to do with the allocation of values. It has nothing to do with public policy. So when my parents' generation, when they were out and they were demanding, and they got. What did they get? They got the Brown versus Board of Education decision. They got the 1964 Civil Rights Act. They got the 1965 Voting Rights Act. They got the Fair Housing Act in 1968. They got measurable successes in the area of public policy that made a difference for everybody who fell under the laws of this country.
Well, okay, I'm just going to interrupt just for a moment and say to everyone who is listening, you are listening to the Queen's Council, an internet radio show for black women who honor the past, plan for the future, and move forward powerfully. We are talking to the Green Party's United States presidential nominee, Ms. Cynthia McKinney. If you have a question for Ms. McKinney, you can call us at 347-327-9459. The lines are not open yet, but there are many callers, so if you have a question, you're going to need to call in to get into the queue. You can continue, Cynthia.
Well, I would just say that the disparities that exist are from family wealth to infant mortality to imprisonment to poverty, home ownership. These disparities exist in the lives of average ordinary folks those lives we want to improve.
Okay.
It is the sole purpose of our activism.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're going to need to dive into some questions here. But first, let me just say, you are speaking my language. I'm ready to raise my hand like I'm in church, all right, because I have a political blog, and that is exactly how I feel, and we have many readers who agree wholeheartedly with everything that you're saying. I'd like to kind of go back on some of the things that you touched on. You mentioned CNN and I assume other networks who aren't really informing the public on what's really going down politically. And I think that kind of speaks to the issue of media consolidation and even some of the newer things that the FCC is doing. What are your thoughts in terms of media ownership?
Oh, well, clearly we do not have the kind of access to ownership that the community needs, but we are not informed and we don't communicate well with one another if we leave out our community media. So we have our alternative media, our community media, and those are really the main methods by which people get real answers and real explanations and real conclusions. I'm reminded all the time that it was Fred Hampton who said, we've got answers that don't answer, explanations that don't explain, and conclusions that don't conclude. And we have people can look at television and have 200 channels, but we're less informed.
Also, when we were talking about the infringement on our civil liberties, everyone I talk to in terms of everyday working class American citizens are very concerned about this. Why do you think that the Democratic Party isn't providing more opposition to the attrition of our civil liberties?
Well, you know, they would have to answer for themselves for what is truly dereliction of duty. But what I would say is that I would like to encourage people to look in an alternative fashion and do something that they've never done before, just like I did something I had never done before in order to have something I'd never had before.
You know, and I'm glad that you said that. I mean, our listeners tend to be very highly informed and educated, but I don't want to assume that everyone is knowledgeable about the Green Party. So could you explain in simple terms the basic principles and goals of the Green Party and how it might differentiate from, say, the Democratic Party?
I surely will, and thanks for asking, because, you know, we take so much for granted. The Green Party is an internationally known party that has been a part of the governing coalition of parties in European countries. And in fact, in Germany, the Greens were part of the governing coalition. They are now for the city of Bremen, but they were for the entire country of Germany at one point. And now they are part of the governing coalition in Ireland. The Green Party has members that represent it in parliaments across Europe and in Africa and in Asia. For example, the woman from Kenya who won the Nobel Peace Prize for her environmental action was a member of the Green Party in Kenya. So it's only in the United States where we have the situation that people don't really know very much about the Green Party, and that's because there is this drive toward conformity that prevents people, that seeks to prevent people from thinking outside of the two-party paradigm. And so when you think about politics in the United States, you basically think about Democrat and Republican, but there is an entire menu of possibility out there if voters avail themselves of these opportunities.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I went to NYU, there was this roiling argument with my classmates about moving to the Green Party. And, you know, that, you know, question about electability continues to be thrown in the face of anyone who might be curious or interested in voting Green. What do you think is the best answer when someone says, if we were to vote Green, we would be, like, throwing our way our vote?
Well, I don't think it's ever a waste of a vote to vote for someone who reflects your values.
Mm-hmm.
So to waste your vote is to vote for your values, and to not waste your vote is to vote against your values. It makes absolutely no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Ms. McKinney.
Yes?
And you said earlier that we need to elect public policymakers that allocate our values.
Yes.
We have a record number of blacks elected to public office.
Mm-hmm.
Why haven't they furthered the black community values in a more productive way?
In some cases, there are real impediments toward the more equitable allocation of those values that we talk about. And those impediments could be something, for example, as just assembling the required number of votes in order to get a public policy initiative passed. It could be something as simple as, we've got 3 votes and we got to figure out how to get 2 more so we can get 5 out of the 7 members on the board, or, you know. And so it's just vote counting. And in some cases, it's that you've got the wrong person elected, and that person really doesn't care about trying to advance the values of the community. We have seen, now this is the other thing that I liken, you know, in 1992, when I first ran for Congress, mm-hmm. that was the year of the woman, and everybody and the women were saying, we want our seat at the table. Well, when I got to Washington, mm-hmm. I discovered that public policy is actually made at a table.
Hmm.
And so on one side, you've got, just imagine yourself in a room,
mm-hmm.
and in that room, you've got a table, and you've got 2 chairs. One chair is occupied by the representative for the Democrat Party. The other chair is occupied by the representative of the Republican Party. Now, that's the way our political system is today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what has happened is that somebody decided that they wanted to close the door
mm-hmm.
so they could discuss whatever the public policy issue was in private.
Mm-hmm.
But when they closed the door and they locked out the people, somebody gave the corporate lobbyists and the special interests a key so they could come in. So now you've got the special interests, they can come in anytime they want. Well, voting your values and voting the Green Party, if the Green Party or any other now recognized as a minor party, gets 5%. I didn't say 25%.
Mm-hmm.
I said 5%
mm-hmm.
of the votes in November, then that is the equivalent of opening the door and putting another chair at the table. Now, the values of the Green Party is that the Green Party members don't want their representatives to go there and become like everybody else. They want their representatives to go there and change the system. They want to open the door, throw away the key, take it away from the lobbyists, and invite the people to come in.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're voting for when you vote Green.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to just interrupt to tell everyone that you are listening to the Queen's Council, a show for Black women who honor the past, plan for the future, and move forward powerfully. We are talking to the Green Party's United States presidential nominee, Ms. Cynthia McKinney. Ms. McKinney, as you know, most of our listeners and the readers of our blogs are African-American women, and one of the issues that is really bothering most of us is the lack of attention that's being paid to the pay gap for women, and Black women especially. I'm sure you know that we are paid approximately 67 cents for every dollar that white men make and around 85 cents for what Black men make for the same work. If you were to be elected president, how would you correct this disparity?
Well, first of all, you have to have the value of equal pay for equal work as a part of your being. That is not something that you negotiate away so that you can give somebody else advantage for their values to prevail. And I believe that no fair-thinking person would support the notion that women should go to work, perform the same work as men, and get paid less. And if that were something that was difficult for people to grasp, then that's when you operationalize that definition of allocation of values. Then this becomes something that is not compromisable. But you see, in the past, what has happened is that everything gets compromisable. You shave around this one a little bit, and you shave around that one a little bit. And so you compromise on this and you compromise on that. And before you know it, you've got a whole lot of folk riding on your back because your back is bent, because you didn't stand up for those things that are sacrosanct in the process of allocating the values.
Okay, now how would you practically enforce that? Would you penalize companies or, what would you specifically do to?
Well, first of all, you have to work with the Congress
mm-hmm.
from which the legislation
right.
flows.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I know that there are wonderful people in Congress who would love to have the opportunity to vote on and pass this kind of legislation.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be able to work across the aisle with all of the people who share this common value. For those people who don't share the value, then at some point we need to make sure that their constituents know, particularly the families, the working families in their districts know, that they don't appreciate the work of women. And so at that point, then, it becomes a political issue that people have the opportunity to cast a vote on. And what we have to really do is engage folk in citizenship. And so now, once you get the legislation in place, now, you know, in terms of the details of the legislation, if you want to sanction employers, that's one thing. If you wanted to limit the application of the legislation based on the size of the business, that is something that is sometimes done. There are many ways in which you can work with various interested communities to make sure that you get a piece of legislation that expresses a consensus of the values that are out there that move us in the direction of where we want to go, and that is that no woman goes to work performing the same task as a man and gets paid less.
Amen. Okay. Everybody, you are listening to the Queen's Council, an internet radio show for black women who honor the past, plan for the future, and move forward powerfully. We are talking to the Green Party's United States presidential nominee, Ms. Cynthia McKinney. Now, I could have you talking all night because I have a million questions, but I'm going to ask just one more, and I'm going to open the floor and allow some of our listeners to talk to you in person. My last question to you, and Shawna, if you have a question, I'm going to pause when I'm done to let you get yours in before we get the listeners in. But what in the world is the answer to the mortgage crisis?
Well, in the first place, we should never have allowed the banks to to get away with imposing the usurious, in some cases, interest rates that they are being allowed to get away with, and all of the various, you call it predatory lending, yes, the shorthand language. And so basically what we've got is a situation where we've had the largest loss of wealth in the black community and the Latino community since that such wealth was recorded. $98 billion lost, according to United for a Fair Economy in the Latino community, and $92 billion lost in the black community, aside from the pain and hardship of individual families who are losing their homes. At the same time, we've got CEOs of the banks, the culprits of all of this, walking away with record remuneration. The system is wrong. The system is broken. So now what do we do to address the situation? First of all, no one gets put out of their home. No one. And so what we do is we just take a breather and say, okay, we've allowed something, these adjustable rate mortgages, we've allowed something to happen that puts our communities across the country in danger, in a state of insecurity. And so we're going to freeze all foreclosures. We freeze the foreclosures, and then we renegotiate the loans based on sound lending practices. We also say to the banks, no longer are you going to manipulate your books and lie to the stockholders and lie to the public. We want transparency and adherence to strict accounting principles so that we know exactly what the situation of the banks is. I think that we need to do even more with respect to the banking industry, because we've got the Federal Reserve that then allows all of this to happen, and nothing happens that's right, with the Federal Reserve, except that U.S. taxpayers get stuck with an even bigger amount of debt. So I would say that the Federal Reserve needs to be answerable to us. The Federal Reserve does not need to be answerable to private banks whose business it is to make money for themselves and not look out for us, the people. And so I would suggest that we nationalize the the Federal Reserve and make it accountable, totally accountable, and owned by the people.
Okay. To my listeners who are on hold, please prepare to ask your questions. I'm going to ask that you keep it brief and that once you're done, to take your answer off the air so that other people get a chance to call in. Before I open the floor, Shawna, do you have any questions left?
I just want to make sure that we as black women gain access to that policymaking table. And I just want to know, what can we do to make sure or to increase our corporate political influence so that we can have a place or a role in the policymaking?
And you're talking specifically about black women?
Black women.
Okay.
Well, you know, one of the most important things we have to do is we have to participate in the process. We have to run for office.
Amen.
And, you know, there's this idea. I remember when Jesse Jackson ran for president the first time and all this discussion was about qualifications, and they threw that huge word around because I was, you know, not very young, but I was a whole lot younger than I am now at the time, and the qualifications for this and the qualifications for that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in the United States, there's very few qualifications for running for office. You got to have a passion.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to have money. You got to be able to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to wage a campaign successfully. That really is your qualification. It's either you pay a qualifying fee or you collect signatures.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever the particular process is that gets a person on the ballot in their local jurisdiction, black women need to do that. But now we have to be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke at Rutgers University last month,
mm-hmm.
and it was the Women's Studies Department, and I talked to them about how we have now to be very careful. There was a time when women ran for office, and you knew that their platform, part of their platform, was going to be equal pay for equal work. You just knew that.
Mm-hmm.
I know
but
where you're going. Go on.
You've got women who run for office or who are appointed to high offices, and all of a sudden you don't hear anything like that from them. In fact, they're so busy oppressing other women.
I know. I'm like, are you female?
So we have to now be careful. There's a professor, June Terpstra, who refers to these women as women of the hegemon because they no longer represent the values of us. They represent the values of men. They're being used by men to trick us into believing that they actually are one of us, but they really sit in those back rooms with the men, women of the hegemon. So we have to be careful now and be able to read, not with the words on a page, but we have to be able to read a person's character and their background to know that when we give our vote to this person,
mm-hmm.
that this person really shares our values.
Mm.
Okay, let's open the floor. I have a caller. Your number ends with 1804. I'm bringing you live. Please say your name, where you're from, and state your question.
Yes, great evening. My name is Jolly Alley. I'm calling from College Park, Georgia, and I would like to ask, with all that you've been through and all that you've learned and all that you've seen, you are in no way disheartened with the American political scene?
Oh, gosh, that is such a wonderful question. And, you know, the answer is you're right. I've been through a lot. And I've been through a lot only because I wanted to tell the truth and I wanted to make sure that the people understood the truth so that they could make better choices for themselves. I wanted to make sure that every tax dollar spent was a tax dollar that went for the welfare, to improve the welfare of the taxpayers and of our country. And I really don't think that that's too much to ask, but it was too much for some people, and including members of the leadership of the Democratic Party, who acted in concert with members of the Republican Party to allow the crossover to take place. And now that crossover is taking place on a national level, and the Democratic Convention is being roiled because you had Republicans crossing over for Obama, you had Republicans crossing over for Hillary, and you've got this scurrilous comment from Rush Limbaugh about making sure that there's riots at the Democratic Convention. I mean, you know, and so this interference in the process and our failure, really, to be able to see what is happening so clearly right before us. And I understand that we don't see, because it's not on CNN and we are there. It's not on Fox and we are there. It's not on BET and we are there. I just wish that we had more queen women or queen council shows across the country so that we had the listenership that also understood that it's not what you see on CNN, Fox, and BET and all of those that is going to educate our community and move us forward.
Well, we're working on it, Ms. McKinney. I'm going to let you go. 1-804, we're going to take another caller. You are listening to The Queen's Council, a show for black women who honor the past, plan for the future, and move forward powerfully. I have a caller. Your number ends with 1975. Please state your name, where you're from, and state your question. Are you there, 1975?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. Cause usually you identify by area code, so I didn't know if I was the last caller. But anyway, I wanted to say that, Cynthia McKinney, I admire you so much. You are an amazing woman. I saw American Blackout.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my. I cried. You are the Sylvania, I can't think of her name, but you're just amazing. I can't believe what you went through, what you did to fight for us in terms of getting the truth out to the American public, all the sacrifices that you made. My God, I tell you, when I saw this movie, I said, you know what, American democracy is in trouble. It is in trouble. And but anyway, I just wanted to tell you that I think you're absolutely amazing. I'm excited that you're running for president. I wanted to know what your thoughts were in terms of what's going on in the political season with, you know, the Obama right situation, how Clinton and McCain are handling that. And, you know, how would you handle that if reporters were going to ask you about that controversy?
Okay, before you answer, Cynthia, how are you doing for time? Are you able to stay with us?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. Listeners, we have 9 minutes live left, but we are going to go into overtime. So if you're in the chat room, in 9 minutes, when you hear the Blog Talk Radio signal, you can call in and listen at 347-327-9459. You have the floor, Cynthia.
I have one last question. And also, when are you coming to D.C. to do anything?
I'm going
to
have to interrupt because we have a lot of people waiting, so we can only take one question.
I just want to know if she's going to come to D.C. to do any kind of lecturing or anything like that.
Right.
Okay. The corporate press do what they do for a reason. And we have to really be aware of when we're being manipulated. And this entire election has been one grand exercise in manipulation. It's not a surprise to me to understand this because I studied the counterintelligence program. I studied the treatment of Dr. King in the press. I know what our government did specifically and purposefully to Dr. King to destroy his legacy while he was alive, to destroy the movement, and then even when he was dead, to destroy his legacy. I understand that. So when I read that CNN hosted members of the Central Intelligence Agency, psychological operations program in their newsroom, I'm not surprised. The only question I have is how much of what we see on television is a huge psychological operations program that's being played on us. So I don't deal with the situation with Reverend Wright, because if people really want to talk about race, I've put out a paper that I entitled A Discussion of Race Worth Having. Let's talk about the fact that it would take 1,664 years to close the home ownership gap in this country. And now, because of predatory lending and the foreclosure crisis, it's increased to 5,000 years to close the home ownership gap in this country, 581 years to close the family wealth gap in this country. That is that experience by blacks and that experience by whites, the racial disparity. So if we really want to talk about race, let's talk about race.
Okay.
And let's talk about the public policy intervention that's going to eliminate the disparities across the board.
Okay. Thank you, 1975. I'm going to let you go right now. I have a caller, and your last four digits on your number are 0707. You are now on the air. Please state your name or your moniker and your question.
Hello, this is Spellman, and I'm just calling to say I'm finally happy that I get to hear Cynthia McKinley, like, out there. I hate the fact that it's only Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton that's getting all this news coverage. And I also have a question, though, of course. If you were to become president, what would you do about student loans and all these, you know, debt that will be incurred while you're trying to further your education?
Well, in the first place, I appreciate that question because I value education so much. Those of you who know me know that I've been struggling to get this dissertation written for, gosh, too many years. It's embarrassing now. And so I have decided that I'm going to continue my education. I'm going to finish my education and get that PhD degree. But there's no reason for our students to be in debt. No reason at all. Students in Europe, where education is subsidized, don't have to incur debt. It is a public policy choice that our representatives who are elected by us impose on us. And when we choose to cast our votes for the people who will implement a public policy that says no more student debt, then that's what we will get. It is really quite simple. But we have to vote it. We have to feel it. We have to believe it all the way in the depths of our being. We have to become that value. So I say we shouldn't have student loans. We don't need student loans. We need subsidized education. If we can spend $720 million a day for war,
wow,
then we can. We don't have to have a single student who's in debt, or for that matter, in the military, so that they can get an education.
Okay, I just need to quickly interrupt. We have three more minutes where you can listen in, on the Internet. So if you want to continue listening to presidential nominee Cynthia McKinney, you're going to need to pick up a phone right now and call 347-327-9459. We're going to go into overtime. That's 347-327-9459. We're going to continue until either Cynthia McKinney gets sick of us or until we have no more questions, okay? All right, so thank you, 0707. We're going to take the next caller. Your phone number ends with 0368. 0368, you are on the air. Please state your name and ask your question.
Yes, this is Black Achievement. I have a very simple question here. Well, I was watching Charlie Wilson's War, and Tom Hanks said this. Constituents do not elect Congress people. Contributors do. And my contributors are in New York, Florida, and Hollywood. And they need me to be strong for Israel. All my people in my congressional district care about are guns and the Bible. My question to you, Ms. McKinney, is how can we say that the Congress is the house of the people? How can we have effective leadership anywhere, particularly in black congressional districts, when all the money, all the influence comes from the outside, care where it's coming from, all over, with people who do not have our interests at heart? How can we convince people that because someone is well-financed, well-heeled, that person is the least candidate with our interests at heart?
That is an excellent question, too. All of the questions have just been marvelous tonight. There was a time when we in the community understood who had our interests at heart and who didn't, who was the sellout and who was the stand-up person. We understood that. But as soon as we started looking at the television and listening to the what they call mainstream, I will say corporate media, and stopped talking to each other, then that whole orientation flipped. So much so that you got people who believed that Clarence Thomas was going to be good for us. And so they sat him on the Supreme Court, and I've been to the Supreme Court in the lawsuit that dismantled my district. The district, it was not my district, it was a district that was born of the pain and suffering of black rural people in Georgia. And we got tricked. We have to stop being tricked. And you're absolutely right. It's our values that need to be reflected in the public policy that's made.
Thank you, Ms. McKinney. Thank you.
Thank you very much, caller. We're going into overtime. You're listening to the Queen's Council, where black women honor the past, plan for the future, and move forward powerfully. All right. Here we are on overtime. We're going to take the next caller. Caller, I do not see your number, so I'm going to unmute you. And why don't you speak up if you have a question or a comment?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
This is Black Seagoat.
Black Seagoat, you
Hi.
Have a question.
Yes, Congresswoman McKinney, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing fine.
I used to be a resident of the 4th Congressional District, and you used to be my representative.
Oh!
And I wanted to thank you for your leadership and your keen attention to black, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender issues.
Yes.
That's part of your human rights initiative. I used to work a lot with Gary Cox, who was your director of constituent services. And
right.
So I thank you so much. The other thing I want to do is just apologize for how the gay community in that district abandoned you for Denise Majette and allowed Republicans to corrupt them into placing Ms. Majette in office. I was a part of your reelection campaign, and I mean, it just really broke my heart. It really did, to see how shabbily the Democratic Party treated you and how the residents and constituents of District 4 treated you. But my question now is, because I live in Washington, D.C.,
uh-huh.
and we are taxed and we have no representation in Congress, so we have
That's
no vote
right.
and no voice. I would like to know, if you are elected president of the United States, how aggressive, or I should say assertive, will you be in conferring full statehood upon the residents of the District of Columbia?
Well, of course, we don't believe in taxation without representation. And so you've got in Washington, D.C., you've got the D.C. Statehood Green Party. And so the very core of the Green Party's values have joined with the Statehood Party for D.C. and advocacy of statehood for the District of Columbia. So we wouldn't, that's not something we would tiptoe around. We would just be able to state categorically that this is wrong and this needs to be changed, and this is the way we would hope that you would do it, members of Congress.
Thank you.
Lexi, would you like to stay live on the air?
Yes,
I
okay.
Also need to speak to the questioner who was asking about my schedule. And I actually had the opportunity to speak at the University of Maryland, that was probably about 2 months ago. It used to be available, it probably still is, on C-SPAN. So for people, if they wanted to go there, they could see my remarks on C-SPAN, and I talked a little bit more about these disparities and the role of public policy in our political activism and our political vision. I will be participating on May 1st in the shutdown on the West Coast of all of the ports because the International Longshore and Warehouse Union has decided that they're going to take an affirmative action step to protest the continued funding for the war, and they will have a work stoppage for 8 hours on May 1st.
May
1st? So I will be there, that's right, with Danny Glover, Cindy Sheehan, and me, and hopefully thousands of union workers all up and down the coast saying no more funding for war and saying that very categorically to the Democratic Party, which now controls those votes in the Congress.
Excellent. I'm going to take another caller. Caller, your number ends with 9272. Please state your name and ask your question.
Hi, my name is Jackie, and I'm calling from California. And I just wanted to say, Ms. McKinney, that I first heard about you with American Blackout, and that really inspired me to just speak the truth and not take things from what I see at face value. And so you really have become a role model for me. And recently, or maybe not recently, but a couple of months ago, I heard you on KPFA in Berkeley.
Oh, yeah.
You were saying that you were going to complete your PhD, and it was still out there whether or not you wanted to run for president. And so I just want to say thank you for taking that leap of faith and putting your name on the ballot. And please know that I will be voting for you because I really believe in you and what you stand for. And it's a pleasure to listen to you tonight.
Well, thank you so very much. And, in fact, on May 3rd, I will be in Detroit. If there are any Detroit area listeners, there's a water commission meeting that's being held because water rates are going through the roof and people are not able to afford the basic necessity of water. Now, of course, so those in Georgia also understand that Georgia has been in a drought for like the last 8 years. And so now Georgia has to, you know, even reorganize its boundaries so it can take a little of that water from the Tennessee River, because Georgia doesn't have any water. And so water is a necessity of life, and I will be participating in Detroit on May 3rd with the Water Commission. On May 14th, I'm in Los Angeles at El Sereno, the Antigua Cafe, for a showing of American Blackout again. So I've got quite a hectic schedule. I'm in New York on May 16th at a rally in front of the United Nations, and then on May 17th I'll be having a meeting. Please go to runcynthiarun.org, runcynthiarun.org, and you can see my schedule there. And for those of you who want to come out, please do come out and show some love, because it's hard trying to do this, and, you know, we get our inspiration from you.
Well, I'll definitely be there when you're in New York. I'm going
okay.
to take I'm going to take another caller because I know there's a lot of people who've been waiting very patiently. Thank you, 9272. 4149, you are now, well, I'm trying to put you on the air. There may be an issue. I'm going to try the next caller. Let's see here. Shwana or Black Sea Goat, do you have any questions while I work with this?
Well, I guess one of my questions for you, Congresswoman McKinney, is a lot of people have already mentioned it, too, just about how the Democratic Party basically betrayed you. And I
yes.
really appreciate the fact that you did provide an antithetical firebrand point of view to a Congress that was just rubber stamping all of George Bush's divisive and damaging policies. So I just have to say my hat's off to you. You did a wonderful job, and I'm so glad to have the opportunity to talk to you. How relevant, or I should say, what effect do you think the third party candidates will have on the next presidential election? I mean, how viable do you see the Green Party becoming?
That is really the ultimate question. We've got to change the structure of politics in this country. If we don't, with their ability to organize technologically and the oppressive legal regime now, the things that were done by the government during the counterintelligence program era were illegal and un-American, as described by Frank Church, senator at the time. But today, those things are legal. And so we've got such a changed legal environment, such a changed technological environment where every fax, every telephone call, every cell phone call, every means of communication is monitored now. And so we're in a vastly different situation. It's very difficult for us to organize. And someone just told me the other day that the government admitted that they had assigned intelligence operatives to organizations so that they would spy on activists. So if we don't do the work of saving our country today, it will be a vastly different country. We will have lost this battle tomorrow.
Do you hear that, activists? Because we have quite a few in our listenership. I'm going to ask, if you have already asked your question, if you could please, unfortunately, hang up. We have so many callers that this switchboard is jamming, and I would really love to give those who've been holding an opportunity to speak to Cynthia McKinney. So if you've already asked a question other than Shwana, please just hang up, and you will be able to listen to the entire podcast right after the show is complete. I'm going to try to bring in a new person. Shwana, while I handle this, do you have any questions?
I guess I'm still stuck on the access to the policymaking table.
Yes.
I know I asked this earlier. I just want just some clarity. We have, as I said, a record number of black officials elected. Are you telling me that they have been locked out of or denied access to this policymaking table? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, what I'm saying is that we're suffering from a combination of things that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
One of those things that happened is that we had our first generation of people after the passage of the Voting Rights Act who came from the civil rights struggle. They came from the movement. They came from an orientation of we're going to get in there and get something done.
Okay.
And by and large, they did.
Mm-hmm.
But then you see what happens is with every step forward, that step forward is met with resistance. And so those people who don't like the fact that you've made a step forward, which in their case is like a leap forward to them because they like to see a continued state of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, what that means in the policy arena is that their values get allocated and none of our values get allocated. And we won and we won and we won and we won. And so then they reorganized, And they reorganized, they came back with a different set of rules. They changed the rules. That's what Baki was about. That's what Adoran was about. That's what Croson was about. That all of these Supreme Court decisions were reactions to our steps forward, our victories. And that a little bit was taken back, and then we had to step back, and then we had to step back, and then we had to step back, and we had to step back again. So now what is our response to that?
Mm-hmm.
Our response to that should have been a new strategy,
mm-hmm.
a new strategy that takes into account where we are, but that didn't happen. Sometimes that new strategy means that you've got to get new people, an infusion of new and fresh ideas and
okay.
young people
okay.
into the system.
Mm-hmm.
And the older people have to step out of the way and let young people come up and lead sometimes with our mentorship.
Do you see any mentorship going on? Do you see our leaders grooming the next generation to take the mantle of leadership in our community and in our government?
Well, you know,
be honest.
I don't see it. And so we had a series of successes, we had a series of pushbacks, and then we had something that happened.
Mm-hmm.
When we got that pushback, then you see what happened was then some people, they began the con game on us.
Mm-hmm.
We honestly have a political elite that has been elected.
Okay.
That is black. And they then negotiate that allocation of values.
Okay.
Because now there's a relationship here where this community has shown that it has the ability to step forward.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to contain that forward step,
mm-hmm.
we have to negotiate the values. We have to
mm-hmm.
negotiate that allocation.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have allowed to happen
mm-hmm.
is that those who negotiate the allocation on our behalf don't really negotiate on our behalf. They negotiate on their own behalf.
Okay.
And so that's our fault. If
yeah.
we have people that we vote for who don't represent us, well, that's our fault.
Yes.
Well, since you're talking about values, I'd like to just kind of tell you what our values are here at the Queen's Council and on our blogs, blackwomenvote.com. You know, we have quite a few readers, and we got together and we spoke about the issues that we believe need to be addressed specifically for black women, and that includes family integrity, legislation, and social activity that help us keep our families whole and together. We're also very concerned about media consolidation and how we're portrayed in the media as women and as girls. We feel like we need to be able to own media outlets and control the depiction of
mm-hmm.
African American women. We're also very concerned about our finances,
mm-hmm.
education, which you've spoken to very well so far. But a few things that we want to make sure that we cover before we go is safety and health. And I'm going to start with health because I know that you have a long history in environmentalism, but essentially what we're saying is we want to be physically, mentally, and emotionally healthy
mm-hmm.
and whole.
Yes.
And we want to create tools and pathways for our total health without undue resistance from any source.
Yes.
And we're very concerned about the environment. We want neighborhoods that are greener than they are. We want to live in neighborhoods where it's safe to go out and exercise. What can be done in the near future to make neighborhoods that are predominantly comprised of people of color more environmentally healthy?
We have to vote our values again and again and again and again. Because you see, the developers have access, they have more access to your elected official than you do. Because if your values were reflected in your elected official, then you would have density requirements to your liking, you would have green space requirements to your liking, you would have the type of structural development that of the neighborhoods to your liking. I went to when I first got elected in this new district after they dismantled the district six, calling it a racial gerrymander, I was elected and I had to go up into a new part of Georgia. And so I went there and I did a little tour and it was a white area. And they had streetlights, they had sidewalks, they had the houses with large front lawns set back and lots of trees. And I asked the county commission chair, I went there and they had maps on the wall about future development. And I said, "Do you have a problem getting the developers to keep your neighborhood so nice?" And they said, "Oh, no, we have standards. And if they come into our county, they have to abide by our standards."
Mm.
And so now, but this is one of the fastest growing counties in Georgia. Mm. And it's Gwinnett County, for those of you who are familiar with the Georgia landscape.
Yeah,
it was Gwinnett County. And so just across the border in DeKalb County, you've got folks who have bought these magnificent homes and they don't even have streetlights. They don't have sidewalks, although I got a ton of money for sidewalks with DeKalb County. And when I took my experience to the CEO of DeKalb County, I was told, "Oh, no, if we impose standards, then the developers won't come." Well, that was patently not true, but there was something else. There were other values that were being expressed in the public policy. When our values are no longer reflected in the votes of our elected representative, look at what they've done to me. The pro-war, pro sit down and be quiet black person faction in both the Democrat and Republican parties exacted accountability for their values on me. So now you don't have me in the Congress. So they wanted someone who would sit down and be quiet, and that's what we have now. So that is. And if it's good for the goose, it's also good for the gander. That's the way politics is played in our country. If we are not engaged in politics for the reasons of having a public policy result, then we're engaged in politics for the wrong reason.
Okay. That's an excellent statement there. I'd like to quickly move to safety. You mentioned earlier about Sean Bell and how he was killed essentially in a hail of bullets. And one of the items on our manifesto is safety. We want freedom from all violence. We want to exercise our right to express ourselves, improve ourselves, and be ourselves without the threat of violent retribution by anyone. And while we are extremely concerned about the situation with Sean Bell, and we really know that something has to happen. I used to live in New York City, and this is by far not the first incident where we've seen such a level of police misconduct. My first question to you is, what do you think ought to be done now that the police officers in that case have been exonerated from that case? And the second question I have is, why do you think that we as African Americans are really up in arms with this case when in reality black men are killed in a hail of bullets every day and we don't see that kind of response, let's say, from someone in on the streets of Philadelphia?
We've got a literal hail of bullets coming at us, and we've got a figurative hail of bullets coming at us. Our men are under attack every day that they live in this country. We have to understand that. I have a son. My son could have been Sean Bell. And unfortunately, though, my son could also have been Michael Bell in Gina. We have got to understand that emotional responses do not net us the appropriate political result. And so while I am very emotional about a whole lot of things that I see happening, but the goal has to be expressed in a public policy result. So, for example, when I saw those people, for the Hurricane Katrina survivors turned away over the Crescent City Connection Bridge, I introduced legislation. Yes, all of the people laughed. People love to laugh at many of the things that I did because they would shake and quake if they didn't laugh and somebody else thought about what I was doing and followed suit. I introduced legislation to take away the federal funding and the access to federal equipment to any law enforcement organization found to violate the human rights of the people it is organized to protect and serve. Wow. Now, imagine if there was a real consequence for the behavior, but there is no consequence. They know that we're going to be upset for a few days. Look at what happened with Gina. Gina mm-hmm. 6.
Right.
Who's even talking about Gina 6 now? Who's even talking about Gina? Who's talking about Louisiana? Who's even talking about Hurricane Katrina now? If we really cared about Hurricane Katrina and what happened, we wouldn't have voted for anybody because the Democrats did not put Katrina on their list of the first things that they would do in the first 100 days.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
So we have to vote our values, and when we fail to vote our values, we complain. We get to complain. But complaining doesn't solve the problem.
I have a question from our chat room. We have someone who wants to know, what impact do you think that you can have on the majority vote? And I'm not 100% sure what the question means, but I'm wondering if that's an allusion to the prevailing opinion that if you vote green, you're going to harm the Democrats.
Well, if you want to see the political expression of your values not reflected in public policy, then you cast your vote based on what I call blind faith voting. It's a hope, it's a prayer, it's a faith that you have in something unseen, uncommitted to, unpromised, or you vote for your values. Now, people in Venezuela could have voted out of fear, or they could have voted their values. They chose to vote their values, and they got Hugo Chavez. People in Bolivia chose to vote their values, and they got Evo Morales. People in Nicaragua chose to vote their values, and they got Daniel Ortega again. So when we vote our values, we can actually have an opportunity to get our values. Mm-hmm. And for those who think about this spoiler issue, how can you have 1 million black people go to the polls and their votes are not counted? The Democrats fail to stand up for the 1 million people who went to the polls and their votes weren't counted. In 2004, John Kerry promised that he was going to stand up. We weren't going to have a situation where black people, 1 million black people, go to the polls and their votes weren't counted. And he capitulated the very next day. In 2000, Democrats didn't fight for the integrity of the vote that they won. And so now you are told and you believe that George W. Bush won by 537 votes. To believe that the Green Party at the time, it was Ralph Nader, caused George W. Bush to go to the White House is to ignore completely the facts of the 2000 election. Anybody who understands the facts understands that what they've been told is a convenient lie.
That is really something. I'd like everyone to know that you've been listening to the Queen's Council, which is an internet radio show for black women who honor the past, plan for the future, and move forward powerfully. We've been talking to the Green Party's United States presidential nominee, Ms. Cynthia McKinney. I just have two last questions for you before we go.
Thank you.
Yes. First of all, yes, I want to thank you tremendously for coming. I mean, it's like a dream come true for a lot of us. My first question is, what can we do to help you with your agenda?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a machine that people can volunteer for, and where would they have to go to do that?
Well, in New York, you can go to our website, which is runcynthiarun.org. In Georgia, the situation is very difficult in terms of ballot access. You have to have 43,000 valid signatures in order to get the Green Party candidate on the ballot. And that's very difficult in a situation when you've got literally hundreds of millions of dollars going into the political process for the two candidates, for the two political parties that are not going to end the war, not going to give us single-payer health care, that are not going to roll back the infringements on our civil liberties. They are not going to reflect our values. And they've got hundreds of millions of dollars, and we literally only have tens of thousands, and so we can't do very much in terms of paying people to do the work, the necessary work that a campaign requires. But I would encourage folks to go to runcynthiarun.org and ask us a question. Tell us where you live, and we can then refer you to people who are our volunteers on the ground in various states. We're organized in about 24 states now. And so we do have a modest operation in various states. New York State is about to get started with their signature drive, and we would love to have folks come to the meeting on May 17th. We will have it posted if it's on our website. If it's not there now, we will have it posted. And come to the meeting on May 17th for those who are in New York, and we can talk about ways in which we can organize so that we can have valid choices in November. Because right now, the powers that be have already decided we're going to restrict the political discourse. You're not going to be able to talk about certain things. These are going to be your candidates, and these are going to be your choices, and you really don't have any choice at all.
Okay, and our final question is actually a trick question we're asking you because you're on the air. Will you come back to the Queen's Council after you become President of the United States of America?
No, honey, the Queen's Council is going to come to the White House.
Oh, all right, girl. I'm hearing you. Snap, snap.
I want to be Attorney General.
That's right.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
I am very grateful. We're going to do our closing now, and I will give you a call tomorrow to really thank you properly. But everyone, you have been listening to the Queen's Council with presidential nominee for the Green Party. That would be Cynthia McKinney. And unfortunately, it is time to bring our show to a close. This show is brought to you by the blog Black Women Vote and also by the blog Character Corner. If you have a comment, question, or an idea for the show, you can call us toll-free at 866-387-1113. Again, that is toll-free at 866-387-1113. I would like to thank my producer, Greg Wilson, for his help at the switchboard, and also for the songwriter for our theme song, who is Frederick Gilmore, who can be found at g2gmusic.com. Again, you have been listening to The Queen's Council, a place where black women honor the past, plan for the future, and move forward powerfully. We'd like to thank everyone, and we look forward to hearing from you next week. Take care.
Good night.
Good night.
I think you want your money.